Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Galen Godby, your host this evening. Tonight we'll be talking about Black History Month with our guests Joe Guerrera and Jill Yunkin from the Lehigh County Historical Society in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Let me first welcome Jill and Joe. Glad to have you with us. And let me share a little bit of information about each of you and your distinguished backgrounds with our listening audience. Joe Guerrera is Executive Director of the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum and the Lehigh County Historical Society in Allentown. In the little biographical sketch that I have of him that makes reference to the 30,000 square foot Lehigh County Heritage or Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum. So this is a sizable and significant enterprise for a region such as ours. He previously served 11 years as president of the Abraham Lincoln Group of New York, a nonprofit historical society in Manhattan, and currently serves on several prominent Lincoln organization boards of directors around the country. In 2005, he was appointed to the now-concluded advisory panel for the Federal Lincoln Bicentennial Commission in Washington, D.C. This is the group that advised on national events for Lincoln's 200th birthday celebration back in 2009. Joe has been a speaker for the United States Historical Society in Richmond, Virginia, and at Ford's Theater National Historic Site in Washington, D.C. And over the past 20 years, he's presented more than 200 scholarly programs at schools, universities, and historical societies. He's appeared on A&E's Discovery Channel, C-SPAN, and PBS television. He's been quoted in the New York Times, USA Today, and most recently in U.S. News and World Report. He's authored more than 50 articles, essays, and book reviews that have appeared in scholarly journals, magazines, and newspapers. That's very impressive, Joe. Jill Yunkin, our other guest this evening, is the Assistant Director, Chief Curator, and Director of Library and Archives of the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum in Allentown. Jill has a BA in History and Political Science from Moravian College, where she graduated summa cum laude and was awarded the History Prize for Outstanding Scholarship. She earned a master's degree from Rutgers University, specializing in labor and intellectual history. At the museum, her responsibilities include the oversight and care of 3 million historical documents, 85,000 vintage photographs, and 30,000 historical objects. Jill's been on the staff there for 10 years now. Welcome. We have a couple of very well-qualified and interesting folks with us this evening. So the topic before us is what is Black History Month? And let's start with the obvious question for Jill. Why don't you take this first one? What is Black History Month?
Well, it's a good question, a good way to start. Black History Month is an annual celebration. It takes place in February. And the reason that for that is because it was centered around Abraham Lincoln and also Frederick Douglass's birthday. So what started out as just a week has now extended into a full month celebration, which I think is a great idea. Black History Month celebrates the achievements and also the central role that African Americans played in United States history. This is an event that really brings forth their contributions, something that has certainly been in many ways lost to history, as we all know. This celebration has been signified a national holiday since, I think, 1976.
So this is a national event, that is the Black History Month. The programming for the event comes from the decisions that are made by schools or colleges and universities or various community organizations. In other words, there's no one sitting, you know, in Washington or at some university saying to everybody, you know, across the United States, this year we're going to focus on X, Y, and Z. This is grassroots kind of planning and programming. Fair enough? Joe?
Yeah, exactly. And I think what it means for us in the world of history and museums is that I think the story of Black history has never been properly told.
Mm-hmm.
It's been understated, if not kept perhaps in some box tucked away deep in some archives. And, you know, starting even with the American Revolution, I think that the beauty that I find in Black History Month and what I find so appealing to me is that it gives us an opportunity to invite the community and everyone and to show them and to teach them the contribution of African Americans throughout the formation of this country, all the way back to the American Revolution, when they were not citizens and treated, as we all know, how poorly they were treated in the conditions. Yet they were standing up with the Continental Army and with the militia. And some reports say that even at Yorktown, that 25% of the federal forces there were African American. And there are varying interpretations of what percentage fought in the American Revolution. But again, most people don't know that. And the American Civil War is another example, that by the end of the American Civil War, there were more African Americans wearing the uniform to fight for the federal government than there were in the entire Confederacy of all the federal, Confederate forces.
Mm-hmm.
And so here they are giving up their lives, sacrificing for a country they're not even citizens in, and dying in large numbers. And I think that these are really important chapters of American history that need to be revisited, that need to be told. We all know about the movie Glory, for example, and their heroic assault on Fort Wagner.
Fort Wagner, yeah.
And it's a movie worthwhile. So I think that Black History Month gives us an opportunity to sort of take this history out of the box and take a look at it, reexamine it, and help to tell the stories that made America great. And that's really what we rely on. I mean, I would like to say that some of the most inspirational events in my life come from African Americans. And in a moment, if we can talk even a little bit about Dr. Martin Luther King and his importance in all of this.
Yeah. Before we do that, though, you're obviously a Lincoln scholar of some note. And you will recall that President Lincoln publicly credited the black troops with turning the tide of the American Civil War. Absolutely. Certainly, we can talk about Martin Luther King Jr. and his contribution and his role in Black History Month. Who would like to start?
Well, if we just back up to Lincoln a moment and talk about, you know, the Martin Luther King of the Civil War era, which was Frederick Douglass, the black abolitionist. And it was kind of an interesting, there were several occasions where Lincoln had the opportunity to meet Douglass. And so on the first meeting, and Douglass is in the White House, and he's explaining himself to Lincoln, and Lincoln says, "Mr. Douglass, I know who you are very well." And he was trying to tell Douglass, not only do I know who you are, essentially I admire all that you've done. And in many ways, Douglass was this transformative figure over Lincoln, as were other African Americans. You know, we have this exhibit in our museum. We call it Lincoln's Vanguard for Racial Justice, in that he didn't get to the emancipation moment all on his own. He had other people and he had recommendations. But Frederick Douglass, who truly is a man whose story is worthwhile telling, that's one of the things we're able to do during Black History Month. But it's interesting because Douglass certainly recommended to Lincoln in a very strong way that why would you fight a war with one hand tied behind your back, which is obviously the potential and possibility for African-American troops. And I think one of the things that always disappoints me is when I tell the average visitor to the museum or the average American that, did you know that more than 180,000 African Americans fought in the Civil War, and that number may be even substantially higher than that.
Yeah.
They all shake their heads and they're like surprised. No, I didn't know that. I'm very surprised. I'm shocked. That's a disappointment. But Douglass, who I say is one of the great social reformers of his era, was a big influence on Lincoln. And it's kind of interesting because when Lincoln gave his second inaugural, and Douglass showed up at the White House, which they had a kind of a reception after this, he wanted to meet with Lincoln, and Lincoln wanted to see him, and he was turned back, and they said, well, you couldn't possibly come in. So he told one of the guards, please tell the president I'm here, and they did, and then Lincoln wanted Douglas to come in, and Douglas gets into the East Room of the White House, and Lincoln walks all the way across, and he said, "Mr. Douglas, what did you think of my speech?" And Douglas says, this black abolitionist who was born a slave, he says, "Mr. President, it was a sacred effort." So the African-American community had a profound effect on, obviously, Abraham Lincoln's life and the history of this country. And there are so many stories that really don't get out there that Black History Month gives us an opportunity to showcase those. What do you think, Jill?
Yeah, I certainly agree. And I think many a times we concentrate on the African-American story of slavery instead of looking at some of the very, very positive stories, stories of African-Americans who did some of the firsts in the country, who contributed, whether it was in science, in inventions, alleviating social conditions or in the political system. And instead, you know, I remember as a child growing up what we learned, and there was very little about African-Americans, but it centered on the Civil War and slavery, and that was it. And I think it's really time, and I think we're really starting to do that now, is to show those positive heroes and the positive role models who were African American, who all along, who had made their contribution to United States history. And I think that's so important that we all learn about that as well. And I think that's another reason why Black History Month is just imperative.
You earlier, Joe, said that you would like to talk a bit about Martin Luther King Jr. and his contribution and how he plays into Black History Month programming.
Yeah, he really does. And I think that when we think of history, you have to remember that this is really a quest for knowledge. And what history infuses into your mind is perspective. We all lack perspective, and we just don't know it. And but there are lessons to be learned here, many lessons that we can learn from each other. And one of the reasons that I admire Dr. Martin Luther King so much is the techniques that he used. And, for example, the way that he approached the Civil Rights Movement. When you think of King, and King was born in 1929, what I find interesting about him is that King grew up in playing with white children, and he had obviously black friends, white friends. And then when it gets time to go to school, he's of school age, he realizes that one of his best friends is going to a different school than he is, and he can't go to that school. Now, this would have had a profound effect on any child. King was really a very gifted man. He skipped a couple of grades in school. He skipped the ninth grade. He skipped the 12th grade. But so we say, what is in the Martin Luther King story for us? Okay, what can we learn from that today? Well, we can adopt in our own lives. We can adopt his strategies. And I'll give you an example. When they had the march on Washington, and the student representative was John Lewis, he's a congressman today, and King asked to see John Lewis's speech, and essentially he said something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing this, "What are you going to say, John?" And so he asks to take a quick look at it, and he looks at it, and he tells John Lewis, who I really admire, is one of the great social reformers really of our day, he says, "Maybe it would be a good idea to tone down this language, to change this word. We don't want to alienate anyone." And you think about it, whether we're in Washington, D.C. today, or whether we're in Harrisburg, or wherever you are, everyone's working on something. And I think it's extremely important, the approach that you have, and that's what I'm talking about for King. When King became a winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, the chairman said to him that he was the first person in the Western world to have shown us that a struggle can be waged without violence, okay? And so what King was set out to do was to make people, you hear this rhetoric today where they say the enemy or the opposition or the other party. He didn't do that. King wanted to win over people that didn't believe what he did. He wanted to talk to them. He wanted to reconcile any differences. You know, that's one of the things that make people like King and Abraham Lincoln so important in the annals of American history? Not just looking at what they did, but how did they do it, and then how we can adopt those ideals and incorporate them into our own lives. Think about that.
Well, indeed, King may, in fact, was perhaps the first person to adopt nonviolent strategies as a change strategy or change mechanism for society in the West.
In the West.
But he, as you pointed out, he was born in 1929
right.
and grew up with the Mohandas Gandhi in India using nonviolent strategies against the British.
Well, he actually went over, and we had, Jill and I had an opportunity a few years back to meet with Harris Wofford, Pennsylvania state legislator, has a
U.S. Senator.
Yeah, U.S. Yeah. Senator. A tremendous, actually, background in the political world. He was part of the Kennedy administration. He advised Kennedy on civil rights, and he was one of the people that was instrumental in getting King over to meet with Gandhi. And you can imagine being able to sit there and Harris Wofford's talking about this to us and what it was like to be walking up to the Capitol building to go to work, and you're a half a mile out in a red Cadillac pulls up and it's John Kennedy, and he says, Harris, would you like to get in? But the point, but what we learn from that is, you know, how seriously King took the work of Mahatma Gandhi.
Indeed, if you look at the films of the I Have a Dream speech, you'll see Adam Clayton Powell and a number of King's followers and supporters wearing the same kind of hat that the Congress Party players in India were wearing at that time.
Well, the way King approached it was he really took the Gandhi approach, and that is loving your neighbor as yourself. Just think of that, turning the other cheek. And you think Dr. King truly wanted to do God's will. And he saw this, obviously, as nonviolent. So what he did was he sought to win his opponent over. He didn't want to achieve victory through confrontation. And so, I mean, these are really important ideas and concepts that we can incorporate into our own lives today.
Indeed, and that's a very important message. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godby with guests speaking about Black History Month, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godby, your host this evening, talking to Joe Guerrera and Jill Youngkin from the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum about Black History Month. Are there certain topics? Now, we've spoken about Lincoln, we've spoken about Douglas, we've spoken about Martin Luther King Jr. Are there other topics that are kind of hardy perennials in Black History Month?
Sure. We actually have several programs coming up. We go from the conventional to the unconventional, if I could say that. And, you know, one of the things that we like to do is to sort of transcend what's conventional. For example, we have a program coming up soon on the Underground Railroad. That would be conventional. And Jill's going to talk about that maybe on how you view the Underground Railroad and how difficult it can be.
One of our programs that we did for Black History Month was on the Underground Railroad, and it was a topic that most people don't know a lot about. Historians have really not done enough research on it, by the way, and that's really one thing that is really very interesting and I'm very happy about, is that they're really starting to look into it much further than they have in the past. But the program concentrates mostly on Pennsylvania and its role, and very important and pivotal role in the Underground Railroad. And many people were interested to know that this part of Pennsylvania right here, from Philadelphia on up the coast, there was a lot of routes that slaves took to reach freedom.
Do I recall correctly that even during the Civil War itself, until the idea of contraband of slaves being contraband of war, until that time, slaves, runaway slaves, had to be returned to their masters, even though the war was being fought.
Oh, absolutely.
And, oh, yes.
And so, I'm picking up on your comment about the risks involved for the people who were sheltering the runaway slaves.
Right. Well, it was not only risk for those who were sheltering them, but it was also risk for the slaves themselves.
Of course.
They could be, there was a fugitive slave law. There were actually two, the last in 1850, which was much more severe than the earlier one in 1793. And it basically said that federal marshals, it was a federal law. So anyone could go into any of the northern states, kidnap a slave, return them to the state that they were from, and then the slave master could do what they wanted. And in many cases, they were whipped. They could have been shot on return. Anything could have happened to them. So this was something that they really needed to think about. And, think about that, the courage and the heroism that it took to do this, and this absolute lust for freedom to take that precarious journey up north.
And you can see how Pennsylvania would be such an important state in this, because the end goal for many of the slaves was to get to Canada.
Right,
and
yes.
We actually touch on Canada in the northwestern part of the state.
Right, right. So, initially most of the slaves, runaway slaves, would want to make it either to New York and or to the New England states. But however, after the 1850 fugitive law, it was much more safer to go to Canada, and that's what most slaves did do, and they settled in Canada. Canada did not have any type of fugitive slave law up there, and actually had a much more welcoming to the runaway slaves, and a lot of communities were started up there by black settlers.
Yeah. Now, Jill, you just pointed out the Underground Railway as an area that probably needs more research and writing about and dissemination of information about that. Are there other topics that you folks think need to be researched more thoroughly and discussed through whether Black History Month or other means with the wider society, with the wider public?
Local Black history. Mm-hmm. We actually have one of the things I think it's important to realize that this is something far greater than the issues of the Civil War and slavery and civil rights, and that is, and these are all important. But I think the positive African-American contribution to American popular culture is what's frequently overlooked. And one of the exhibits that we have in the museum right now, and it will be on for until the beginning of into early March, is about local African-American history as it relates to this region and some of the churches and the people. There's actually a statue in Allentown of Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King. I believe it's true. It's the only one of that type, the two of them together, life-size, in the country. And here it is in Allentown, Pennsylvania. So that's something that I find fascinating. But I think that the local component of African-American history, I think, is something that more needs to be done on. And I think it's the area that most people really don't. There's so many aspects of black history that people don't realize. And if we go back to the American Revolution and the Declaration of Independence stating all men are created equal, but yet we're living something else, different. And then the realization that the Constitution of the United States protected slavery. And people will look at me and shake their head and say, that's completely untrue. And, I say to them, if it's untrue, why did they have to amend the Constitution to abolish slavery? And so if you look at the Constitution, there are certain, even though the word slave or slavery never appears there, it's protected. And I have empathy for the founding fathers in that in order to make the Constitution and to forge it, they had to have all the states participate. And without Virginia, you have no country. And so Virginia's a slave state. So, but these are the largest slave states.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's an important state. So the point of it is that, and it's Thomas Jefferson said something to the effect that we had the wolf by the ears, and he was frightened of what this would be like when it got loose. And so, but anyway, moving away from all of these issues, the area that I like to concentrate on, seriously, there are so many, is the positive contribution that African Americans have made to American history that they so seldom get any recognition for, that people just don't even know about. What do you think about that, Jill?
Oh, sure. I think, again, you know, as we were talking about earlier, you know, the history is top down, and that is starting to change, though. And it's very fortunate that it is. So we're starting to really learn about African Americans' contribution to history. And you can just look back at all the people who, you know, Booker T. Washington, Washington, George Washington Carver. I mean, there's just so many. W.E. Du Bois. It is a litany of different African Americans who have made a huge contribution to this country in one way or another, even down to some of the smallest, you know, people. The first woman business, you know, African American businesswoman. These are all people who really their stories need to be told because they are role models. And
yeah, it's really, when you think about the Great American Songbook and you think about jazz and you think about the history of American music, you've got this,
yes,
know, black music, blues and so on coming up from the Delta, coming up north from the Delta. You've got Eastern European Jews and other immigrants bringing a very interesting literary tradition and these things coming together in a way that they never came together anywhere else in the history of the world. And that's really been one of our greatest gifts, it seems to me, to the world.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Agree with you. It's a very unique type of music that you find only here in the United States, and that, as you mentioned, comes up from the black experience.
Yeah.
And it's part of our whole lives now.
Yeah. Do you see any trends in topics for Black History Month or in any trends in research?
I can say that personally, my own trend is that I think there are so many positive stories. I had I knew a physician many years ago, and he was an African-American physician, a wonderful man. And he used to tell me, he said, listen, I like to hear all the stories and the history of the Civil War and the Civil Rights Movement. That's great. I love it, he said. But I also think, and this is what really inspired me, he said, that we need to spend more time on all the positive contributions. I mean, I think of my own life. When I was many years ago getting out of the military, it sounds like a very simple thing. Anyone that's been in the military knows that you go through a very quick debriefing. I'd come from overseas. I landed in New Jersey at McGuire Air Force Base. They take you over to Fort Dix. You're going to be out of the military in about 12 hours. They do like a quick debriefing. So we get in this room, there's about 200 guys, and it's just kind of an assembly line. You go from room to room to room, and 12 hours later, you're a civilian. So it's 1:30 in the morning, and we're getting ready to hear a talk on veterans' benefits. Okay, 1:30 in the morning, veterans' benefits. And a short African-American man walks into the room. His name was Mr. Gordon. And I remember it just as clear as if it happened yesterday. And he said, you know, many of you, he said, I'm going to talk about veterans' benefits, this African-American man said to all of us. And he said, but first I want to say this. And he said that many of you may not know where you're going, what you're going to become, what you're going to do. And I want to give you some advice. And that is, don't listen to what other people tell you. And that is, I want to tell you. And then he started talking about his own life. And that he said to his family he was going to go to college. And they said, well, Wayne, no one's ever gone to college in this family. You certainly can't. You won't be able to afford it. You won't be able to go. You won't be able to get in. And he defied all the odds. He got in. He got a high-level job with the Veterans Administration. The point that he made to me was this African-American man I'd never seen again, met for 30 minutes, was the most inspiring person in my whole life. Mm-hmm. And that he said that you can do what you want to do in this world and be what you want to be if you believe in yourself, because he believed in himself. So that's part of the stories of history and what we're looking for. And that one of the things that I think is an emerging trend, at least for us, is we want to tell positive stories that other people can use to advance their own life, to live the great American dream. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I agree. And I think historians are moving a bit away from the Civil War and what that meant, the institution of slavery, and moving into almost more general topics of African-American studies. And I think that's very good. For example, the African-American experience, what was that like? How is that unique to the United States, and how is it the same? And I think that this is a very good thing. I think it's something that has really not been looked into very deeply, and they're starting to do that now. So that's always a good thing, moving from this progression of this main topic of the institution of slavery into the wider experience, and then also starting to look, as Joe mentioned, into the contributions of African Americans.
It's interesting to me in talking with many people about their understanding of the black experience in the United States that they all say the same thing. You know, when I was in school, we studied the Civil War, and then all of that stuff disappeared. My own sense is that we've not done a good job at all of talking about the hard realities of the Jim Crow South.
No.
And no. There are, as you know, a number of scholars and social critics right now who are arguing that we're in a second Jim Crow period.
Yeah.
And I think this, just as a not pretending to be an expert on black history, but as just someone who's paying attention to what's going on, I hear so many, comments to that effect. It seems to me, if we're going to be successful in promoting a good understanding of the black contribution to the United States and the experience of blacks in the United States, somehow we've got to take on textbooks and the textbook industry. Am I right in that?
No, you raise a very valid point, and that is this: that if you talk to the average white American and you talk about the Civil War, and they know something about it, and they understand that the Constitution was amended after the Civil War, and we had what are called the Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment to the Constitution. But what they don't understand, and people will say, well, we did everything we should have done, we took care of business, everything's fine. And there's the lack of perspective right there,
yep.
As I said a while back. You don't know what you don't know. And what most white people don't know, they don't really understand the Jim Crow laws. They don't understand the Supreme Court decisions. They don't understand the federal retreat that took place. And when the Supreme Court ruled that the Civil Rights Act of 1875 was unconstitutional, and they don't understand what happened in the South and around the country. They don't understand the lynch laws. They don't understand that even though we amended the Constitution that said we had equal protection under the law and that people could not be prohibited from voting based on race, color, or previous condition of servitude, that we invoked other barriers, that the average person thinks that we did everything that we should have done. We did not do everything we should have done. In fact, we gave a blank check out, and you could say that we misrepresented what we intended to do.
Indeed. And even going into both the First and Second World Wars,
yes.
The tremendous discrimination against
yes.
black troops,
yes.
Who in many cases were not allowed to fight.
Right.
There's a lot of work to be done yet. And how does that idea or that judgment fit into Black History Month?
Well, it's education. This is really all about education.
Mm-hmm.
I find that people are open to the truth. One thing that should inspire all of us is that Americans want fairness. They really do. And if you take a look at, some of the problems that happened in the Deep South during the Civil Rights Movement, at the Edmund Pettus Bridge and some of the marches and the unleashing of dogs on people and the things that were done. Americans don't want that. What inspires me is that Americans want to see things done fairly, and they want to see uniform laws and justice. And so the only time that we get into trouble is when people don't completely understand the past, and they don't understand how we victimized the African-American community because they weren't a part of it. They weren't maybe living in that area. They don't understand what it was like when they started to segregate bathrooms and toilets and school buses and doing it in a substandard way. And if you don't, and you know, as we say in the museum all the time, you don't know what you don't know. And so that it is all about education. And so Black History Month gives us an opportunity to educate people.
Yeah, and clearly a very important one. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godby, speaking with Joe Guerrera and Jill Yunkin from the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum. We'll be right back.
WDIY has tripled its broadcasting power. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godby, your host this evening, talking to Joe Guerrera and Jill Yunkin of the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum. We're talking about Black History Month and all of the activities going on in the Lehigh Valley region right now, celebrating the contribution of Black Americans to our nation's history and progress. Tell me, Jill and Joe, about some of the historians who've made real important contributions to understanding and beginning to uncover the hidden history of Black America.
Well, yeah, I'd like to start out with John Hope Franklin, for example. Mm. I would say he's passed away in recent years. John Hope Franklin was one of the great African-American scholars. In fact, he and another scholar by the name of Benjamin Quarles are both equally important. And the reason I say that their contributions are important is because of this, is that, and I get into trouble probably by saying this, but frequently what happens in the study of Abraham Lincoln, we tend to look at Lincoln as a model saint, and that we bypass any imperfections or blemishes or differences that he may have come up with, or anything that we don't like to hear, and we present a more eulogistic Abraham Lincoln, a secular saint, if you will.
An icon.
An icon. And we fail to realize that Lincoln struggled with his own set of issues. And some of those issues were the fact that he was a product of 19th century America, that he would have been imperfect. And I think what's important to realize is that when you see Lincoln as a total human being, you see him in a more powerful way, that he was able to transcend his own prejudicial views. And I'll give you an example on how I say that, is that John Hope Franklin would make the point, if he were here, that Lincoln grew. We all grow. And I think that, you know, that's one of the beauties about human existence. I frequently say, at the precipice, we change. Mm-hmm. At the time of the great crisis, we begin to reconsider our avenue of approach, and our perspective is enlarged and changes. That certainly happened to Lincoln. And I think that frequently an African-American scholar like John Hope Franklin or Benjamin Quarles, both of these two scholars are deceased. Another great scholar, though, is James Oliver Horton, who is alive today. They can see Lincoln sometimes more clearly than we can, because they're looking at him more objectively. And I do believe that you see Lincoln in a more powerful way. And I also think that studying the development of African-American history is frequently brought to us in a more substantial way by an African American. And I'll give you an example. There's a museum out in Illinois. It's the Abraham Lincoln Presidential mm-hmm. Museum. And it's one of the greatest museums in the country. And a number of years ago, they were preparing to open the museum. It's only been open for probably 10 years or something like that or less. And they had an exhibit area on African Americans. And so the director of the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency said, has everyone that should look at this exhibit given their clearance on it? And the word was yes, yes, yes. And then this director said, well, what African American scholars have looked at it? And I guess at that point, little to none. And they said, well, no one. And they said, well, you better call. And they called a professor from Howard University, Edna Green Medford. And, you know, essentially they wanted her input. And she helped them. They realized they had made some serious mistakes. Mm-hmm. And, for example, the mistake that they had made was in this exhibit they were portraying the African-American experience during the Civil War as unrelenting work and working 7 days a week and being maybe beaten by your master. But Professor Medford said, well, you know, you've missed the point of the breakup of the family, the destruction of the family. That was one of the most pernicious aspects of slavery. Imagine a Friday night you're being told that on Saturday we're going to auction the family off. You may go as a group and you may go individually. And that's where this term sold down the river comes from. So anyway, the point of it is by this African-American scholar, Edna Green Medford, looking at it and calling out the mistake. She's a great historian in her own right. In fact, she's currently the chair of history at Howard University. Can you see the difference? And I think that I find that by frequently reading what African-American historians have to say, it strengthens my resolve about the greatness of Lincoln. But it also is that they're able to point out his blemishes and his imperfections and inconsistent remarks.
Well, in point of fact, it seems to me that greatness is not about perfection,
yes.
which is denied to all of us in principle.
You are
greatness,
so right.
Greatness is about people overcoming
yes.
their failures, their myopia, their mistakes,
yes.
their prejudices,
yes.
and persevering and
yes.
persevering. Lincoln failed and failed and failed. He meddled with his military leaders. He made disastrous mistakes in so many cases. One example, in 1862, the carbine repeating rifle was
yes.
demonstrated for Lincoln. If he had adopted that weapon for the Union Army, it probably would have cut
sure.
the war short by a year or two. That's just one of many mistakes. But the point is, you don't judge him as the total mistakes. You judge him as great because despite being probably clinically depressed and his wife probably being clinically depressed and losing his son, they persevered. And so the greatness comes from overcoming
yeah.
the limitations, not from not having limitations.
Well, it's almost like you took a page out of what W.E.B. Du Bois had to say about Lincoln. And Du Bois, who I, again, going back how this strengthens and sort of amalgamates our resolve for Lincoln, and Du Bois said something, and I'm paraphrasing him now, that we love to look at great as flawless.
Yeah.
But that's no way to look at Lincoln. He said, I loved him because he was not flawless, that he was inconsistent, he could be indifferent, but ultimately he did the right thing and he was one of us, but yet he became Abraham Lincoln. I mean, what do you think about this, Jill?
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly agree, and I think that's a very important to have people like that that we can look to, but realize that they are also flawed as well. But I'd like to bring up some of the books that
yes.
There's so many that
like a librarian and archivist.
right. I think, and you know, we did talk about how history is moving away a bit from slavery, but I think one of the most important books in African American studies and Black history, and one that made a huge impact on me, and it's probably one I think a lot of us have read when we were in high school, is of course The Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass. There is not very many books that can be topped, and I would suggest to anyone who hasn't read it to please read it, because it is certainly well worth worth it as well. But some of the other books, just to mention very quickly, are by Ira Berlin, who is another great historian. He's still alive. And he has written numerous books on the African-American experience. And so he is a good one to look up. One of the books is The Making of African America. And it's an excellent book. That is some I was talking about earlier, how he gives you this kind of general overview. He will give you that general overview of the African-American experience here in the United States and what that meant to them as well. And I think that's a really good way to help to come to an understanding and see the perspective. I have to bring up, too, because he was actually the founder of Black History Month, and that is Carter G. Woodson. And he wrote The Miseducation of the Negro. And looking at that book as well as what W.E.B. Du Bois, whom Joe mentioned, wrote The Souls of Black People, and also Booker T. Washington's book. If you look at all those together, I think you can get a really good understanding of the perspective of Black Americans at the time of how do we succeed in this country when there is discrimination, when there is racism. And each of them took a different, somewhat of a different approach to how to do that, whether some felt that they should kind of cut their path separately, or if they should be together and we should all join this path together and take this journey together. So I think that really is a really great way to look at all these different perspectives as well. Another book that I want to point out, which was a book that I read as a graduate student and affected me quite dramatically, it's called Roll Jordan Roll, and it's by Eugene Genovese. And I know a lot of people, there was a lot of controversy with that book as well. But it gives you a different perspective of slaves in America, and it's one that is less of this type of relationship where the master and slave, but where the slaves themselves could kind of manipulate their situations to make their life a little bit better. Totally. And it showed that there was some power. This relationship, although very, very unequal, they at least had some control over their lives. And I think that was a very important book as well. So these are just a few. I have tons and tons, tons of them, but these are just a few that.
Is there any recent research on? Let me back up. Does Black History Month only deal with Americans or with
No,
because I was thinking. There's a new film out called The Birth of a Nation about Nat Turner's rebellion. And it made me think about Toussaint Louverture and Haiti and the creation of a black society and government in Haiti, and how important that was in shaping attitudes, in the South in the early 19th century about the fear of slave revolt and things like that. He was a phenomenal figure.
Oh, yeah. Black History Month is not specific just to the United States.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're mentioning this.
It's really, they have Black History Month in Canada. And there are many other countries around the world that honor Black History Month.
I didn't know that. I'm delighted to hear.
Well, Black History, it's what's interesting to me, African American history is what I always prefer to call it, is that the more you know about it, the more you realize you don't know and the more you want to learn. And one of the books that I would add into this, and I read in graduate school and started out thinking, well, this isn't going to interest me, and that was the autobiography of Malcolm X. And I started out thinking this guy is just way too radical and out there for me. And in the end, I ended up having empathy and a genuine appreciation for the man. And I think that, and it is one of the top books of all time, that should be read, it should be required reading by everybody. I think that education is the key to all of this for all of us, and that is the more that we know about each other and the more transparent we are, the more that, let's say, the average American knows about Black history and gets that through, hopefully through Black History Month, the more likely we are to be more tolerant, more civil-minded, and I think more successful in our own lives and our own country.
Hear, hear. I think that's certainly the case. We talked a bit about some of the important historians who've been making contributions to research in Black history. Ken and Jill, you recommended a number of books about Black history for our audience. One that I would suggest, it's not specifically about Black history, but it's an expose of the textbook industry in this country called Lies My Teacher Told Me.
Well, that's a really good point. And we know I always try to be completely neutral when it comes to politics.
Good luck.
But, you know, we know that there are certain states that influence the publication of history books.
Of course.
And, you know, those states, I mean, these things go on today. We think we've arrived. Things are getting better. I'm long-term optimistic. Arthur Schlesinger used to always tell me, I got to know him in the last 15 years of his life, and that he was always short-term pessimistic, long-term optimistic. And so that ultimately, I always look at American civilization in 50-year increments. And there are certainly problems. I used to collect textbooks. And so after a while, I had so many textbooks, I thought to myself, what am I doing? But I would lay them out on a table. And I would pick a particular topic out of the index, and I would look at what each and every one of them had to say. Yeah, there's no question there are certain things that are sanitized and pushed another way, and obviously we have this distortion. But it sounds like, being an academic yourself, you have your own thoughts on this and probably a good perspective. What do you think is happening?
Well, I share your view about, in the long run, yes, things are changing. We are becoming a more inclusive society. There's still a lot of fear out there. Demographic shifts will exacerbate those fears for some people. But by and large, I think we're making some very significant progress as a society. In part because the nature of the business world and economy has changed, and we're now beginning to sense that diversity, although it brings problems with it, is terribly important to support innovation. And in a hyper-competitive global economy, for many organizations, it's innovate or die. And so we are, in a way, fortunate to have the kind of diversity that we have in our country. And people are beginning to understand that working with people from different backgrounds increases the likelihood that you can be creative and innovate. So I would personally agree. We're getting toward the end of the session. Are there some websites? Are there some TV series or things that you folks can recommend for the audience, perhaps somebody who couldn't get to a program?
Today with technology, that's the beauty of the computer. As much as I hate to say this, you can type in any topic you want in Google, and it can take you all over the world. What I would recommend to people, Jill, you have a smile on your face.
No. I was just going to say, you know, type in PBS too, and there's some really great documentary shows on PBS that, you know, then you can just put in African Americans, and they do wonderful things, and you can certainly find out a lot on those.
Yeah, and it isn't just PBS. I would say public radio. I mean, we are big fans ourselves of WDIY. Mm-hmm. We appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely.
And, you know, how you are helping us to educate the people in this region. And I would recommend all of the listeners out there, if they're not a member of WDIY, they should become members and support this station, because ultimately, this is the best radio out there. And you're helping to spread the word about education, perspective, social justice, and civil rights.
Well, thank you very much. I think we will all concur that WDIY is a good thing.
Yes,
absolutely.
It's a good note on which to end our very happy discussion today, very helpful discussion. I'm Galen Godby with Joe Guerrera and Jill Youngkin signing off. Thank you for listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.